Twitchell's Book One, Dwindling Magic. Written and read by T.D. L. White. Chapter 29. Fight and Flight. Over half the guests made a break for the six chairs on the stage, a chaotic stampede driven by a reflexive impulse to claim a seat and secure a place alongside the alchemist. The narrow stairs, inconveniently tucked to the left-hand side of the stage, acted as a choke point, compressing the crowd into a densely packed mass of elbows and flailing arms, each individual bidding to outshove everyone else to get through. A small dragon rider broke free of the mob, the first chair fixed within their sights, only to be rugby-tackled by a hulking mage lord. This victory was short-lived, though, as two more of his kind launched themselves into the fray, turning the side of the stage into a sprawling heap of capes and waistcoats and knee-high leather boots. Sitting on the chair was the first challenge. Staying on it for 10 minutes would surely be impossible. Pockets of fighting erupted among the crowd. Shifting alliances were quickly formed to take on other groups in a chaotic free-for-all that made absolutely no sense to Nick. Perhaps they had long-standing grudges that needed exercising. Among the brawling, Collier and his uncle were laying in to three other men dressed as valley-dwelling bards, complete with realistic-looking lutes on their backs. Just like the man-boy to be making friends already. The real problem was the guests on the right-hand side of the floor. They'd taken the alchemist's claims about the inspector at face value, and were not waiting for a jury to deliver a verdict before dishing out their punishment. And the alchemist had been right about the guests having weapons with them. There were no guns visible. Perhaps security had been effective enough to dissuade that level of armament. But the glint of knives in hands caused a shiver down Nick's spine as the crowd surged towards his friends. The inspector wasted no time in helping the two fourth years up onto the stage. Not that Jenny or Elf needed help, they were more than capable of the task. The extra height would be useful, but with 50 attackers with blood on their minds, it wasn't going to be nearly enough. While the inspector grabbed the chair and stood in front of the girls, Elf kicked the back of Jenny's ankle so hard that Nick winced. "They've got no chance," he whispered to Cece, who was watching beside him on the balcony. "And Collier should be helping them, not beating up those bards." The twang of a lute being smashed was followed by two bards tumbling headlong through a row of chairs. "There's no way they'll last for 10 minutes against that lot. 1 minute would be a miracle." Cece pawed at Nick's back. Specifically at the lump under his gown. "I haven't got any weapons in there, remember?" he said. "Not unless you're thinking of stabbing someone with the quill." Cece nodded vigorously. "Oh, you mean I should draw a symbol?" He slipped the bag off and took out the key to the air, the notebook, and the ink. With no time to think, he opened the ink pot, dipped the quill, and drew the home symbol as fast as he could. The combination of adrenaline and anxiety worked in his favour. The portal grew fast, and with weightlessness sweeping through him, Nick found himself drifting toward the high ceiling. With a wild swing, he snatched at the balcony railing, almost dropping the quill in the process, but miraculously holding on to both. Now they had a way out. He just had to find a way to get the others up to the balcony. Steadying himself on the railing, he checked his destination. The inspector was jabbing the chair at a mage lord in a green cloak. Jenny swung a kick that caught the head of a wonky-looking ranger, lifting them off the floor and sending them crashing into the second row of seats. Three more people took the ranger's place, ducking to avoid Jenny's kicks. Elf made a dash for the microphone stand, grabbing it at the same time as another, less stylish but much larger mage lord. She released the stand and seized the cable instead, swinging the microphone around like an Olympic hammer thrower. It struck the mage lord clean on the temple, the sound of the impact massively amplified through the hall's speakers. A shocking sonic boom causing a temporary ceasefire as the unfortunate Mage Lord crumpled onto the stage. For a moment, Elf held the undivided attention of the entire hall, which she capitalized on by performing an elaborate flourish of a bow. Amid the fleeting silence, a single round of applause broke out. Collier, with a lute tucked under his arm, enthusiastically clapping, while around him, fighting resumed. Unfortunately for Elf, this newfound attention caused a group of seat-seekers to break away from the far side of the stage, putting their initial quest on hold in order to exact revenge. She fell back, dashing to the corner where Jenny and the inspector were still just about managing to keep the marauding invaders from summiting the stage. There was no way they could survive this new wave of attackers now stalking Elf. Nick took a deep breath before launching himself off the balcony with a hard kick toward the stage. In hindsight, this wasn't his best idea. He'd wanted to get to his friends as quickly as possible, but the angle wasn't right. It was much too high, and now he was flying fast and true and straight into the wall above Jenny. As he sailed over the inspector, distracted by the inevitable headlong collision in his very near future, he didn't really have the mental capacity to fully appreciate the events that unfolded beneath him. To start things off, the inspector, who must have seen him coming, slammed his chair onto the stage, stepped gracefully onto it, and reached up to grab hold of Nick's tie, which, being only a clip-on, didn't really slow Nick down much. But it did change his trajectory a fraction, deflecting him a few degrees downwards. "Thanks for this," the inspector said, and by some strange trick, the tie burst into flames, becoming a fiery sword. Like a real magical fiery sword, right there in the inspector's hand. Elf, who was still in mid-sprint across the stage toward Jenny, didn't stop, but ran straight up the other girl, springing off her strong shoulders into the air above Nick, and landing on top of him like she was riding a surfboard. The force of Elf's landing pushed Nick into a desperate nosedive at the stage. He was still moving far too fast to save himself. In a matter of milliseconds, his head was surely going to make a sizable dent in the tight-grained wooden planks. And it would have done too, had Jenny not caught two fistfuls of his gown and swung him round 180 degrees, sending him straight back toward the balcony. As gravity left her body, she timed a left-footed toe punt at a skinny ranger wearing a rather tight velvet bodysuit. Crack! The ranger's wrist surely broke as the vorpal blade she'd been thrusting at the inspector flew from her hand and embedded itself into the back of a lute. A lute that Collier was currently brandishing like a club, swatting at anyone unlucky enough to be within his sizable reach. And so, mere seconds after he'd left the balcony, Nick found himself acting as both a surfboard with Elf on his back and a hang glider with Jenny holding onto his gown. He somehow managed to give Collier a little wave as they soared high over the man-boy's wide shoulders. Jenny let go when they were above the balcony, then grabbed Nick's gown as she fell. The same trick she'd used on James when they were stealing the potato. A wave of nausea washed over Nick, forcing him to suck in lungfuls of air while he pulled himself down to the first row of seating. The balcony kept on swaying beneath him, despite the fact that he wasn't moving anymore. "I think I'm going to be sick," he said, dropping the quill onto his bag and slumping into a seat. "What about the inspector?" he said, between heavy breaths. "Don't worry about him," Jenny said, looking over the edge. "No one's getting close to that flaming sword you gave him." "That was the tie," Nick said, the motion sickness subsiding now that gravity was back in charge of his internal organs, helpfully nudging them into their rightful positions. "A clip-on. He gave it to me on the first day."
"Always one step ahead of everyone else."
Elf shook her head, Cece back in her arms.
"I told you, he knows more than he lets on."
But...
Nick wanted to point out that there was no possible way, on his first day, that the inspector could have known that this was going to happen. "Let's get out of here. Jenny..." He picked the key to the air back up and offered it to her. "You can draw us a symbol."
"Not until we speak to the alchemist," Elf said, "and get the portal book back."
"What? But I rescued you, and you're still alive," Nick said. "That crowd was going to kill you. It still might. It's a miracle that we're all in one piece."
We won't get a better chance to talk to the alchemist than this, Jenny said. We've got to take it. There's no time. You can wait here till we get back, or come with us. Nick looked at the quill in his hand. It was the key to the air, the key to his safety. All he had to do was draw another symbol and he could escape. Jenny and Elf started moving toward the stairs, not a doubt in their minds that they were doing the right thing. And they were right. James needed them. Cece scampered back along the row of seats. She held Nick's hand and looked back at the girls. Yeah, yeah, you're right, he said, his voice a mix of resignation and determination. I'm coming. You go on, I'll catch you up. The monkey gave him a smile and ran back across the balcony. Nick sighed, then quickly gathered up the notebook and the ink and hurried down the stairs after the others. With all the fighting in the hall, coupled with the fact that most of the alchemist's soldiers were also still in the hall, the corridors were deserted. Nick hadn't quite caught the faster girls when they rounded a corner ahead of him.
"Hold that lift," he heard Jenny shout.
"No problem,"
Bobby replied. Nick ran around the corner in time to see the large rat jamming his cricket bat between the closing lift doors. Only then did Nick notice the bodies of the black-clad soldiers strewn across the floor.
"I knew you'd lead us straight to the action,"
Zen shouted, leaping over a cowering soldier and giving Nick a hard slap on the buttock.
"This way, Nick," Elf said, rescuing him from the interaction by taking his hand and pulling him into the lift.
Inside, the alchemist was backed into a corner, hood still pulled so low that instead of a face, there was a deep, dark shadow.
"Ground floor coming up," Bobby said,
standing beneath the buttons before pushing the top one with his bat. As the doors closed, he hopped out of the lift.
"I'll catch you up there. Got to finish up here. You can have the two at the top, or you could save them for me."
Before waiting for an answer, he jammed the bat back into the door.
"Last-minute passengers," he said, as another guest walked calmly into view.
"Going up," the inspector said, adjusting the clip-on tie back into place. "I hope I'm not intruding. It seems that this has turned into quite the extracurricular field trip." He ushered Collier into the lift. The barbarian man-boy was still clutching the battered loot, which now resembled a couple of pieces of driftwood held together by a fishing line.
"Lift's full, I'm afraid," the inspector said apologetically, as Uncle Vadik sauntered up between the doors. "You'll have to get the next one."
"Duh," Uncle Vadik nodded politely, keeping a sharp eye on the inspector's hand, which was back adjusting his tie again. The door closed, and the lift shuddered into action.
"Time for some business," Elf said to the alchemist. "Like you agreed, before you condemned us to death."
"Business," the alchemist said. "I will honour my commitment."
"We've got a friend," Jenny said, "with poison in his blood. From Rask, you know, the snake."
"I know of Rask. Your friend is dead."
The lift rattled upwards. "No, he's alive. He has a countervenom in him that works on magic, and the magic, well, it's dwindling. Do you have any idea how we can cure him?"
"It's too late for him," the alchemist said dryly. "Shame he didn't come to see me before he succumbed to that barbarous poison. Magic doesn't come or go. It simply is. But poison, that's different. Given time, one can train oneself to resist all poisons as I have. Once it's in the blood, the only way is down. Your friend will be plucked from this earth soon enough."
"But can't you make something for him? You're our only hope." Jenny was desperate.
"If I'm your only hope, then you have no hope."
The lift was quiet.
Collier said. "Am I allowed to talk?"
"You're in the lift, aren't you?" the alchemist said.
"My father wanted to make contact with you," Collier said. "That's why I'm here."
"It is noted. I'll be sending a message to Mr. Solokov imminently," the alchemist said. "It seems like I misjudged this school of yours, Inspector. You really are getting the next generation prepared for all manner of things."
"We strive for excellence," the Inspector said. "But even I am surprised by how quickly these youngsters are learning. I'll be taking the book, you understand, and the stone."
I thought you'd say that, the alchemist said. But I really can't let those go without something in exchange. Otherwise people will say that I'm losing my grip.
Consider it damages for your attempt to gain control of Twitchell's, the inspector said firmly. You know your little cyber attack only lasted a few minutes, a minor inconvenience. And we can't be having our students' Wi-Fi time put at risk. We're fully back in control of things now, you understand?
The alchemist didn't reply. When the lift came to a stop, the doors rolled back to reveal another door. The inspector found the handle and swung it open. It was dark outside. The lights must have gone out again. But Nick recognized the buildings around the statue in front of the Albert Hall. The two vans were back, parked on the pavement, both of them silent. The inspector held the door while the others filed out. The guards were nowhere to be seen, and the whole area was eerily deserted. Everyone watched as the alchemist shuffled from the lift, one awkward mechanical step at a time.
"It seems I've underestimated you," the alchemist said, "and the caretaker."
At that moment, Nick noticed the birds. Dozens of ravens perched upon every nearby ledge, light and railing. There were more still, gathered together on the top of the black vans.
"I expect you won't come quietly." The inspector took a step away from the door and put a hand up to his tie.
The surrounding birds leaned in toward them in unison, edging their beak toward the alchemist, awaiting the reply. In one motion, the alchemist's cape ripped in half, revealing not a person, but a huge white owl supported on a wooden perch held up by two rats. The owl spread its wings, the biggest wings that Nick had ever seen, and the inspector ripped his tie from his collar. To Nick's surprise, the tie didn't turn into a fiery sword. The man flicked it like a whip at the owl's belly. The great bird screeched and swept its wings together, launching straight up off the perch, which snapped into two pieces, leaving each rat brandishing a wooden-handled sword. And then the ravens descended, a black cloud rushing in and easily overcoming the rats. But not so the alchemist. The owl twisted and turned with remarkable speed despite its size, creating a vortex of black pursuers in its wake and disappearing over the top of the statue. "Time to leave. I think we have everything we need," the inspector said, coiling his tie up before tucking it into a pocket. "Do any of you need a lift?" Elf, Jenny and Nick shook their heads.
"Thought not. Collier?"
"I'll wait for my uncle," Collier said quietly, looking at his sandal-clad feet.
"What about James?" Jenny said, hopelessness clinging to her voice. "He's dying."
"So he's the one that got bitten by Rask."
The inspector walked to the nearest van and opened the driver's door.
"Yes, the alchemist was our last chance, and that stupid owl didn't help at all," Elf said angrily.
The inspector looked puzzled.
"That wasn't my interpretation," he said. "And with this, I think we have everything we need, give or take a little experimentation."
He held out his hand, and in it was a soft white feather. He pointed a thumb toward the back of the van.
"I need to get these artifacts to safety. I'll be back at Twitchell's by midnight."
"Will you have the stone with you at Twitchell's?" Jenny said. "We need it. James needs it."
"I'd be unwise to disclose the location of such important items in such a public area. I'll meet you at the school."
The inspector winked at them before climbing into the van. The engine started, and both vans drove away. The streetlights blinked back on.
"Told you so,"
a confident voice exclaimed from the direction of the merchandise stands.
"Now, who wants a Dragon Rider t-shirt?"
"Thanks for nothing back there," Elf said to Collier.
"Hey," he said, "I was fighting my way toward you. Then you flew to safety."
Elf didn't reply. She just took a long drag on her vape.
"Let's go," Jenny said. "I don't think Mage Lords and Dragonborn Barbarians are supposed to mix."
They left Collier, with his broken lute, standing by the statue. Back in Brighton, James was still sitting at the kitchen table where Nick had left him, head down, snoring gently. Cece gave his ear a gentle tug. "You get the portal book back?" he asked groggily, without opening his eyes.
"Kinda," Nick said. "But we did meet the alchemist."
"Nice," What's he like?
They, Jenny said. The alchemist is an owl.
Technically, an owl and two rats, Elf said.
I don't think the rats are part of the alchemist, Nick said. I think they're more like servants. Anyone for tea? Jenny asked. I'm making a pot.
Hey, James said, finally opening his eyes. You just talked about rats. I didn't think you liked them.
I don't, Nick said, but I am glad that we've got Zen and Bobby on our side. And he was glad. Not just about the two rats, but about helping his new friends.
This podcast was brought to you by me, T.D.L. White. I'll be reading a chapter a week until it's complete.